Kelly was born in Denver, raised in Riva Ridge, Louisiana, and moved back to Lakewood at the age of 8. While in junior high school, she developed an addiction to food. She tried to fill a God-sized hole with food. She traveled and lived in Virginia, then Seattle, then came back to Colorado at the age of 28. She spent over 10 years in the clutches of bulimia. Moving was her attempt out. Moving was her attempt to outsmart the disease. She came to OA in May or June of 2007. God helped her to become abstinent in March of 2008. Kelly? Kelly with an I.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I'm a bulimic.
Hi.
I see a lot of familiar faces, a lot of friends. And I'm going to refer to the big book called Alcoholics Anonymous and the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. And I did write out a lot of what I want to say, and I'll try to stay on track. So the first thing that I guess I want to say is, of course, thank you to Amy and Marcia, which we have said, and anyone else who contributed their service to making this happen, and especially the wait staff. And so, like, thanks for the farmers who raised the eggs and gave us all that. So, something that is always in the forefront of my mind, not only when I read the big book with my sponsor, but when I look at a lot of the coins and the chips or whatever that they give us in program OA or AA, that it's, you know, it's a triangle with unity, service, and recovery. And that I try to remember that right now in OA, I had to get a home group and do service with that home group, and that, you know, recovery has to come first. And for many years, I didn't want recovery. I wanted to go to meetings, I wanted what you guys had, but I didn't want to stop eating. And like Kelly had said when she introduced me, my first memory of compulsive overeating began when I was 13 years old. And at that time, my mom had told us, my sister and I, that she was pregnant. So there was a, you know, baby along the way. And so I was really curious about sex, you know, like, how did that happen? And, you know, and then I had a serious boyfriend. And so when things didn't go well in that relationship as a 13-year-old or the way that I wanted, I would eat and I would feel better. And I felt very comforted by food. I loved creating meals, talking about food, eating whenever I could. I would eat all day long if I could. I felt out of control in a way in my mind, yet I felt in control of what I ate, kind of a manipulation technique. And I would start sneaking food. You know, my parents would go to bed, and then I would just sneak a lot of food later at night, and then be really embarrassed, like, the next morning, like, who ate all the cookies? I don't know, but it was me. then I'd say a few years later, you know, going through high school and experimenting, of course, with alcohol and drugs, one night after drinking and eating a lot, I threw up. And I think it just kind of happened because I was so sick with way too much, just food and alcohol and, you know, smoking pot and stuff. And I felt really relieved and better after I had thrown up. And I thought, wow, I will not hold on to the calories, and I can eat as much as I want and get rid of it. And it kind of started the ball rolling at that young age. And I began, I guess, numbing out is with anything that I could find. So if I couldn't get food, I would use, you know, boyfriends or friends or alcohol or drugs. And I want to refer to the 12 steps and 12 traditions of OA. There's on step one, page one, and today is kind of cool because the date is 1111. So it's like, okay, here we are, step one, and maybe 11. But it says that, you know, I mean, just a reminder to just kind of say it out loud and, you know, and find our higher power somewhere, that, you know, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. And when we say the steps, those are people who came before us and have recovered. And these are the steps that they have taken. So, you know, it says in there that compulsive overeating is an illness that cannot be controlled by willpower. None of us decided to have this disorder. We can now cease blaming ourselves and others for our compulsive eating. I ate and purged off and on for 10 years. And I went once to OA, actually to that Colfax Club in 2000. And I went there because I told a boyfriend while I was drunk that I was bulimic. And it was the first time that I had ever mentioned that to anyone. I had never said anything to anyone about my relationship with food. And he encouraged me to go there. And I went to a meeting, and one of the guys there, you know, was sitting there, you know, he's pretty overweight, and just said, "I'm really proud of myself because I threw away a dessert item in the trash last night." And as soon as I heard that, I was like, I'm not throwing away dessert. I'm not throwing away food. I'm not going to do that. And I continued to just binge and purge. It also says in the OA 12 and 12 that we are not like normal people when it comes to eating. We can't quit, and we crave more. I, like Kelly had mentioned, there's a God-sized hole that I felt like food could fill, but there was never enough. I mean, it's God-sized, so it's huge. it's a power greater than ourselves. So it also says in the book that we have found through much experience that no matter how adept we become at facing life's problems, we will always have these abnormal tendencies. We were obsessed with food, and no amount of self-control or weight loss could cure us. So the second part of step one is that our lives have become unmanageable. And this is where most of us have tried to deny ourselves that we have this disease. And even when I started going to OA years later, I still was in denial that I had a problem. I knew that my life was unmanageable, but there is even times today that I just don't know why I should stop. And so it's just a reminder that I have this disease and illness, and I'll never go back to be a normal eater. So I guess another part of the book says there are some self-destructive things that we have done to avoid obesity. Dieting. I would go on low carb, no carb, Dexatrim, Herbalife, cocaine, cigarettes, caffeine pills, coffee, only fruits, only veggies, no fruits, no white foods, no eating after 6 p.m. And I starved myself for six months, eating only like a saltine and a cucumber slice per day. I would do sit-ups and push-ups and leg lunges in a hotel room in Arizona when I was living there with a boyfriend, invited myself there and just drank. And, you know, if you don't eat food and drink alcohol, you're done for. So I would try walking and running and binging and then riding my bike to the gym and working out for hours and then riding home. And my life and my focus revolved around my body image and what others thought of me, mainly men. So even that was never enough to fill this God-sized hole. The purging would bring me to tears every time. I would look in the mirror and beg God to help me. But in a way, there was a percent of me that didn't want the help. I mean, I wanted to stop, but then I didn't, and I didn't know how. And that's the insanity around it. I would wait. I would get roommates to help me stop eating. And so when I was around the roommate, I would make healthy foods, and look at me, I'm eating salad or whatever. And then my roommate would leave. I'd order pizza, eat it, binge, purge, and just always on guard for someone finding out. Bless you. I begged in 2000 when I lived alone for the first time in Denver for God to help me. And I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. I knew OA was out there, but it wasn't in the forefront of my mind. I would go to any length to get the food that I wanted. I would turn into a zombie and end up at the grocery store or the convenience store. I was able to quit for a while, for long periods of time, and move to different cities and then back to Colorado. And I was engaged in Seattle, and I actually started going to AA because I tried to quit drinking and couldn't stop on my own. And something in my mind and my soul said, you know, you've got to go get help, and perhaps 12-step help. So I was in AA for quite a while, and I think that I kind of found sponsors and kind of went through the big book, but the disease of compulsive overeating grew bigger, and I allowed myself. I said, you know what, you're not drinking. You can eat whatever you want. You can binge and purge, because that's part of the deal. You can, as long as you're not drinking, you won't get drunk. I didn't realize that you can get drunk on food, or that I can get drunk on food. I can get completely wasted like a heroin addict with food. I would go to meetings, and I was still binging and purging and living alone, and I became insane and unstoppable. It says also in the OA 12 and 12 that we ate to sate the fears, the anxieties, the angers, the disappointments. We ate to escape the pressures of our problems or the boredom of everyday life. We procrastinated, we hid, and we ate. So what happened? What happened to me is that over 3 years ago, I think, the time is a little bit foggy, I moved back to Colorado from Renton, Washington, and broke off the engagement and found myself really back in the clutches of the illness, even full force. Years and years ago, when I had lived alone, I thought that it had stopped, and it came back even bigger and worse than before. And I went to an OA meeting on a Friday night at Shepherd of the Hills Church in Lakewood, and there were about three people at that meeting. Amy was one of them. And so she became my first sponsor, thank God, for other bulimics. I thought that like women in Hollywood and like movie stars were bulimic, and then that made it okay for me, actually, because I was like, they're doing it, so I'm allowed to do it. But I didn't think that like average people did it. They shared their hope and their strength, and Amy is a very good friend of mine and a mentor and a woman who walks the road of happy destiny with me. And I have another sponsor today, actually, Robin. And I don't think that sponsorship should be a secret. I feel like when we talk to people, like, who's your sponsor? I'm not telling. I can't tell you. And it's like, it's okay. You know, we need to sponsor. That's the thing. I need to sponsor. You know, if anyone doesn't have a sponsor, I tried to get sober in AA with the big book by myself, reading and going through the steps. It doesn't work. It does not work. As you can see, I began binging and purging, and I was a dry drunk. I was very unhappy. There was no happy, joyous, and free in my life for years, even in recovery, even in OA and AA. And so I did, what happened is that we went through the steps. We got the OA workbook. I have the OA 12 and 12, and I didn't magically become abstinent. I didn't just say, okay, steps, you know, come into my mind and my soul. It's like it took action. It took actually writing pen to paper. It took picking up the phone, dialing the numbers, getting in my car, driving to a meeting. All those actions, and like Mike was talking about, half measures avail us nothing. And actually, half measures will avail us no recovery. I can't have a little bit of recovery. It has to be all of recovery. And I think that the first step, which is fitting for today, is mainly it's like the rock and the foundation and the reminder that, you know, even when I come up here and say, I'm Kelly, I'm a bulimic, that's step one for me again. My abstinence is sometimes shaky, like at Serenity in the Rockies of June of 08. I was afraid to eat there. I was afraid to go home from there to eat alone. I asked God to eliminate any foods that would trigger a purge. So for a while there, I was doing no wheat, no corn, no soy. And that worked at the time. I would drink lots of coffee at 3 o'clock. I only had three meals. I would call my sponsor. I would call other people in program. I did whatever it took on that daily basis so that I would not purge. That whatever I would do. And I was willing to go to any lengths to not purge and get rid of the food. I did gain some weight. And I actually got pregnant and gained a lot of weight. And, you know, I think that I'm, some ABCs are that, you know, I was always, I guess, really concerned about my body image, really from, and thinking that people were looking at me and talking about me and thinking about me a lot. Even at a young age, I would ask my mom, I'd be like, those people over there are talking about me. And she's like, they're strangers in the grocery store, Kelly. They're not looking at you or thinking about you. But I had always thought that. And they're saying I'm fat, or they're saying I'm eating too much, or this and that and this and that. And that, you know, part of abstinence is, step three is our will and our lives. And to me, it's also like my body. I mean, it's just every ounce of me I've got to give to a higher power and something that's greater than me, and recognize there's something bigger. So on page 58 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about how it works, and how, the acronym for that is like HOW, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And honesty is the first step, just getting honest with who we are. And the second step is open-minded, that there's a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. Not that I have to believe in God or believe in you, I just have to believe that something can restore me to sanity. It's possible. It's possible. And the third part of that HOW is willing, and that's the third step prayer. And I have to remember that turn our lives and our will over to the care of something else. And that care is a loving care. I mean, what else is it going to be? So we do deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient. And without help, it is too much for us. There is one that has all power. That one is God, and may you find him now. I just have a little bit more about the steps and the program of recovery, and that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines, and that these principles, not necessarily the steps, but just the principles of like open-mindedness and honesty and willingness, are guides to progress, and that we're never going to be perfect. And the three main ideas, the ABCs, are that we are compulsive overeaters and cannot manage our own lives, and that no human power can relieve our addiction to food, and that God could and would if he were sought. And I think, a few years ago that I wanted recovery more than the food. And I have to remind myself of that today, that I want the friendships and I want to be authentic and I want to be present for the people in my life more than I want food. I know that it is a false sedative. And one part of my abstinence is no sugar and no purging. And the last bit of like intentional sugar that I did have was that evaporated cane juice. That shit is sugar. I don't know. But. And so I just ate up a huge box of items that had that. And I ate all of them and I felt sick and my throat hurt. And I was so wanting to purge. I just wanted to get rid of it so bad. I can still remember just kind of standing there and white knuckling and just, you know, and getting on the phone, and I didn't get rid of it. That was the last time I had sugar, and that was the last time I purged. And I called my sponsor, I think that night, and I think I called again in the morning and probably called some other people. And there were a few times that even after I would purge, I'd call my sponsor and she'd say, what are you going to have for lunch, or what are you going to have for dinner? I'm thinking, I don't deserve any more food. Look what I've done. And I would try and think about starving children in Africa and stuff. And go, look what you're doing to them. You know, like I have that much power. And I'd try anything in my own willpower to stop binging and purging. And like I just said, God could and would relieve this obsession if I let him. So now when I do eat food, I really do try to at least just say, hey, God, you know, I know you're here and thank you. And even this morning when I got up, I said, thank you for abstinence. Even if, you know, if I have nothing else to be thankful for, because I can be very cynical, at least I can be thankful for that. And what it's like today is that I get up, well, at night I read page 86 through 88 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about our nightly review, where were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. And if those things crop up during the day, I get on the phone and I call someone and say I have a 10 step, and I don't want to do that. I'm embarrassed. I get angry at the littlest things and I get very embarrassed. But I also know that I have to be able to talk about these resentments. I have to be able to talk about food, you know? And that's why I think this is kind of a blessing here today that we can all eat together and be okay with it. It's like, we have to eat to live, you know? I don't know. I've already tried the starvation. It didn't work. That was no way to live. So I do also meditate upon awakening is what it says. So I try to grab the big book and bring it into the bathroom and, you know, this spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And I remind myself that we are not saints. And I ask my Creator, please show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And I meet with an AA sponsor once a week. I call my food in every day. Even the day that I had my son almost 2 years ago, I called it in. Here, I'm at the hospital. I don't know what I'm going to have, but here's an idea. No sugar, no purging. I mean, it doesn't matter where I am. I for me, that's part of abstinence, and I think that's the part that scares some people out of getting a sponsor and like kind of coming clean is like no one really wants to talk about food. I've had so many sponsees that I've said, please just call me and give me your food. That's how I got abstinent, and they're like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk about the food. I think the biggest part is just kind of coming clean that if I don't talk about the food, I will end up eating sugar and binging and purging. So meeting with that AA sponsor, I follow the instructions in the big book. It tells us how to do the steps. And for a year and a half, I've been working with that sponsor. And I have trouble sometimes getting to OA and AA meetings. And I have to ask God on a daily basis, please help me to get to a meeting. Help me to turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And, you know, I just want to end with kind of the St. Francis prayer, which is so foreign to me because for, you know, I'm 32 now, and I feel like for as long as I can remember, I always sought first to be understood, to be consoled, and to be loved by someone. It was my mom or my dad or a boyfriend or friends. Always wanting some human power to take care of me. And now the St. Francis prayer is help me, God, to seek first to understand others, to be loving, and to console my friends. And I think that on this path, or on the road of happy destiny, that, you know, we can be happy, joyous, and free. And it's only possible with God's help and direction. And today I am abstinent, I am happy, and I am joyous and free. And, you know, there are promises in the big book about, you know, self-seeking will slip away and fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. These are all happening to me. I am a miracle of that. And I know that it's, you know, it's just God's will that we're here today, obviously. So, yeah, I guess that's it. The last part is that I just want to turn my thoughts to someone that I can help and what can I do for others, you know, today. And hopefully God will present some of those opportunities. And I hope that if you are suffering today and have that mental obsession and that physical craving and that spiritual malady, that you'll, you know, pick up that phone and, you know, call me even. I'll leave my number. So thanks.